Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Bettering your business takes working with the best. With the James Hardie Alliance, you gain access to leads, training, networking, and support from the number one brand of siding in North America. Achieve new levels of success by joining the James Hardie Alliance today.
This episode was recorded for my UK column show. Please keep us independent by going to support.ukcolumn.org.
My name is Jern. This is Trouble, the battle of ideas.
Yo, Gamma, you were just saying to me a moment ago, there's fire on the roof. What do you mean?
Well, we had our Holocaust summit finally, successfully on the February the 7th. So that's 11 days ago. We had originally planned it for January 27th, the International Holocaust Remembrance Day. But the French International League Against Racism and Anti-Semitism, or the other way around, no, it's the way around, intervened back in just a few days before January 27th, and had the hosting company where the platform was hosted that we were using for streaming shut down our server. So on the 27th, we were just 5 minutes away from going live, and a lot of people waiting. Suddenly, the server went black. Was gone. So it took a while for us to figure out what's going on and what we can do about it. And by the time we knew, we could perhaps have switched over to Rumble or some other streaming platform. But time had already passed and the whole schedule was messed up. We decided to reschedule. And we've managed to get all the presenters on board for Saturday, February 7th. And by that time, the streaming platform we were using, that's ftjmedia.com, had actually found a new hosting company, new contract, new server, set up the software, everything was running. And we successfully did that Holocaust summit on that day. And it was pretty successful. The peak attendance during the streaming was a little over 2,500 people. So that was quite good for our neck of the woods anyway. And then we posted everything on our website that's dedicated to it, holocaustsummit.com. So everyone who wants to see the individual presentations can go there and look what was presented. And as I was, after the event, we had, of course, recorded it. And it was an event that was 10 hours and 20 minutes or so. And then I wanted to chop it up into every single presentation and have a video posted for every single presentation. It took me a while to re-record it, and to use the software to chop things up and compress it, because it was quite some data. And as I was uploading that to our server, the server kind of caved in. Became very slow, and then through a permanent error, couldn't access the site anymore. I had overloaded the disk. We had run out of disk space with all the interviews that I had done and uploaded over the past 1.5, 2 years, and documentaries I produced. So we were running out of space. So got a space upgrade. That was not a problem, going from 500 gig up to 1 terabyte. And then the next day, we got a notification from the hosting company that hosts all various websites, that is to say, Kodo.com, HolocaustSummit.com, HolocaustAcademy.com, HolocaustEncyclopedia.com, and armreg.co.uk, so the web shop, that they have received a complaint from the Anti-Defamation League. That we were the usual people that they dislike and want to see shut down. So they don't like Holocaust skepticism. And they are evidently on the same server, some other websites that we have no connection with. or not the same server, but the same hosting company. We have a dedicated server, but the same hosting company has also websites hosted on some other servers that were not related, but complaints were coming in for that too. And the co-location, you know, there are several layers. We have us using the hosting service, and the hosting service uses a co-location service, and the co-location service sits someplace. And our hosting company that we've been working with for many years made the strategically unwise decision a year ago to move all our websites without telling us onto a server that is located at a co-location facility here in the US, but run and operated and owned by a company headquartered in Germany. Big mistake, because Holocaust skepticism is illegal in Germany, and that company can very easily be legally forced to shut anything down that has to do with Holocaust skepticism. So that co-location company in Germany informed our hosting company, you need to look into this. We got a complaint from the ADL, and if anything is illegal under German law, you need to shut it down. Okay, so we're currently restructuring, rebuilding, moving. That was a unwise decision from our hosting company to not inform us that they have found cheaper, better service with a German company. They may be cheaper, they may be better, but they have to abide by strict censorship laws. So it throws a little bit of a monkey wrench into our system. But, I mean, we have all the backups and everything. We haven't been shut down yet, so we have time enough to move. And hopefully that will go smoothly. But we are kind of in the middle of it. And this is each time it's unsettling, and it is taking you out of your normal working routine of being productive for a week or so. Because if you're handling, I think, 8 or 9 domains all in all, and making sure everything runs, gets transferred properly, runs properly, gets switched over properly, is, well, time consuming.
One wonders if they've heard of the Barbra Streisand effect.
Just within that same time period, I find out, get an email that Finland has a day before International Holocaust Remembrance Day, a day before our original summit day, passed a law outlawing Holocaust skepticism. And it's all in Finnish, so I had it AI translated. And the Finnish government has a long sermon about why they do this. And among them is a section that basically they have been bullied by the European Union. The European Union in 2007 has put in a quote-unquote recommendation on how to regulate hate speech and how to combat racism and anti-Semitism and all this stuff. And they kind of put all members of the European Union under pressure to enact laws that abide by this guideline, which was pretty much written by Germany and France, which are the two most censoring countries in Europe. And Finland has resisted so far, but basically the European Commission has initiated proceedings against Finland because they haven't introduced a law like this. And they were facing potential penalties without the European Union. How that looks like, I don't know. But, you know, they withhold funding, they withhold this and that, and whatever else they can try to get at people. Let me turn off my cell phone here. I don't want to be harassed by this. But finally, Finland just caved in. And it's the 28th country in the world that has now officially is prescribing the writing of history when it comes to this topic with penal law, in other words, with government guns drawn. And that's the only topic in the field of science and scholarship where the majority of Western countries whose ideal used to be enlightenment and freedom of speech and so forth, the only topic where the governments go at to extreme ends of penal law, of government guns drawn, to control that historical narrative, to have only their version heard. And that is 100% proof that this is most important to them. doesn't prove anything else yet, but it should make anyone skeptical about why do they think they have to resort to government bayonets to keep this narrative up and unchallenged, rather than to convincing arguments. They can do it everywhere else, but there they can't. So now with the summit getting attention, getting organized and becoming more visible on the landscape of the social media, evidently we have received the attention of the usual suspects that want to shut us down. The Anti-Defamation League, not surprising, have a second front that has built up in consequence of that summit too. That's Searchlight. Searchlight is this organization from Antifa, from the extreme left, that is trying to go after anything that is on the right and they dislike. So they had a web page dedicated, an article dedicated to our summit, summarizing it and kind of poking fun at it. One section saying in the afternoon the wheels came off at the summit. We can talk about that maybe. There's some truth to it, but it's kind of more funny than anything. It's just human nature coming in. But anyway, at the end of this article, Searchlight says, well, if Trump is so hell-bent at deporting immigrants, they should put Gemma Rudolph at the top of the list. Because why should we accept a guy who contests the mainstream Holocaust narrative as an immigrant? He should be at the very top of the list and should be the first one to be deported. Now, Searchlight is from Antifa, is from the radical left, and the MAGA movement dislikes them, and to put it mildly. So they're not on good terms, I don't think, necessarily. That MAGA and their supporters and the Trump administration will listen to anything that Searchlight and their backers have to say. But Searchlight, of course, now pulling at the same rope in the same direction as ADL, and ADL gets politicians' attention, to put it mildly, talking about the Israel lobby, the Zionists having the Trump administration in their bag and controlling it, with or without the Epstein files and all the things that are in there. So there is a realistic background scenario where they are trying to motivate the current administration to do something against me. Now, there's no legal way of doing it because I'm a legal immigrant, not an illegal immigrant, and I have not... They can revoke green cards. I have a green card, but there is a legal procedure attached to it, and that is dependent on a certain type of criminal record you have to have, and I don't have that, so it wouldn't work. But it is unsettling because the first time it happened to me, 2005, I did not have the green card yet, but I had the certificate saying I am entitled to one, so I was legally entitled, married to a U.S. citizen with a baby and so forth. But before I could literally go to the counter in the immigration services to get the green card, they intercepted me. Just steps away from getting that green card, they intercepted me and deported me. So they were ignoring the law back then. Now I have the green card. There are a few more steps involved, but we see how the Trump administration has reacted when it comes to immigrants. They don't necessarily abide by legal procedures. Yeah.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Shoot first and ask question next. That is kind of the immigration policies.
Guillermo, what exactly is your crime, though?
There's no crime. The crime is from a Zionist or Jewish point of view, a moral failure of, in my opinion, a pseudo-moral failure, but not abiding by their dogma, by their narrative. And within the United States context, so the First Amendment, there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. People may disagree, but disagreeing with someone's historical point of view is not a reason to deprive them of anything.
Yeah, I mean, so what? So what if people have different views of historical events?
Yeah, well, I can give you a devil's advocate's point of view, how they argue. I don't want to make that argument, but I can understand where they are coming from. I think, oh, if we deny, that's like giving the perpetrators a carte blanche of getting away with it historically. And the next person who wants to commit something similar thinks, oh, I can get away because before you know it, people will deny it, will sweep it under the carpet, will justify it, and then we're going to be scot-free. This is a little bit of a push, but I can see how thought processes can get you to the point where you say we shouldn't allow people to discuss it because it was so terrible. And the next time around, the next guy is trying to do something similar. They think they can get away with it. However, a profound principle of any society under the rule of law is that you give everyone the right, even if you were in a court of law, to defend themselves, or that anyone can help defending a defendant. And it's the same in history. If I have a historical narrative and somebody's accused of having done something and I run into new evidence or assess evidence newly and say, well, I don't think that narrative holds up. I should be able to criticize it. This is a profound right, whether you're in the courtroom or in the historical room, to argue. You can do that with every other event. And when it comes to genocides, to massacres, grand-scale massacres in general, the rules change because of the magnitude of the alleged events. Governments think, or pressure groups think, they have to make an exception. I mean, you know, nowadays you can run around and deny the Armenian genocide, as you mentioned, the Rwandan genocide, that you can deny the Holodomor, you can deny all the tens of millions of victims of Stalin or downplay them, but...
Sure, but my point, Garmo, is so what?
The first sentence that I received in Germany for my expert report, the court argued why they have to send me in prison for forensic research. The argument was as follows. My forensic research talks about chemistry. It doesn't talk about Jew. So even though I do not even mention Jews in my expert report, a reader inclined to believe me, coming to the conclusion that the Holocaust story is untrue, may develop hostile feelings toward witnesses of that period who claim otherwise, the vast majority of which are Jewish, which, as a next step, could lead to that inclined reader, inclined to believe me, developing hostile feelings toward the Jews for having lied to such a degree that they may be inclined to deny the Jews the right to live or to have a safe life in our society. So, not talking about Jews can lead to someone reading my expert report into wanting to stuff Jews into the gas chambers. Therefore, I am not allowed to publish my forensic research.
The total number of people who died in World War II is estimated to be between 70 and 85 million. And of that, the Soviet Union suffered the highest losses with around 24 million. So, well, the point is, a lot of people died in World War II.
Yeah, I think that number is a little bit inflated. But again, you can discuss it. Yeah, you can discuss all the numbers of victims, whether there were 1 million Russian POWs who died or 5 million, 2 million Russian civilians or 10 million. You just can't discuss this one number.
Yes, there were also Germans who died at the hands of the Allies in 1945 in Germany.
Yeah, and you can downplay that. You take the Dresden Holocaust. So there was a real Holocaust where thousands, 10,000, 100,000, depending on who you ask, burned in that Allied series of air raid attacks. And the official narrative now is, I think they think that it's 20, 24, 25,000, 30,000 max that have died, whereas others claim 100, 150,000, it goes up to 250,000, whatever. You can downplay that Holocaust which way ever you want. The 2.1 million Germans that were missing in action after the mass expulsion of Germans from East Germany and Eastern Europe are up for grabs as well. There's new research saying, well, when they made that accounting, missing in action didn't mean dead. A lot of people just were not accounted for, slipped through, survived, and therefore the death toll is not 2.1 million, but maybe only a few hundred thousand. And that would be good news. My ancestors, my own family who was expelled, hearing that the death toll of Germans was not 2.1 million plus, but maybe only 100,000, I'd say, if that is true, that is good news. And we should have the same attitude. If not 6 million Jews died during the Second World War, but say only 1 million, the number only, the word only shouldn't go with 1 million, but you know what I mean, in relation to 6 million, then this should be good news. If the horror murder method, the unique homicidal gas chambers were a figment of the imagination and that nightmare that haunts Jews to this day turns out to be just that, a nightmare and not reality, that should be good news too, objectively seen. However, the Holocaust is the sword and shield of Judaism and Zionism, and they need it to corral Jews into doing what they want. And it is their, as I mentioned, sword and shield to impose their will upon Western nations and to control the narrative and to control politicians and to control foreign policies of this country in particular, but also a lot of domestic issues. And they don't want to let go of that. Of course, that's a leverage they have over Western societies that is pivotal to organized Jewish interests and Zionist interests. That's at the core of it, politically speaking. And that is also where we get now attention from both sides. The people inclined to listen to us realizing there is this big connection between history of 80 years past and current political events and manipulations. And there's the other side of the equation who wants to muddy the water, wants to prevent people from seeing this connection and prevent people from realizing this use and misuse of history by distorting it, by misrepresenting it, or even inventing it in, for political purposes, for current political purposes, is not new. The exaggerations and inventions that were made about October 7th, what happened on that day, justifying the Gaza genocide, were similarly invented and inflated as events around what we call the Holocaust. And people start seeing this. On a small scale, it happened on October 7th. On a big scale, it happened in the Second World War. The Holocaust is, again, only the tip of the iceberg of the whole World War II narrative that has been misrepresented. And people start looking into it and realizing, wait a minute, there's something profoundly wrong. I should be open to discussion. For Christ's sake, it's 80 years ago. Any other event in history, after 80 years have passed, that means everyone who lived through the period is pretty much dead, and only little children from that time are around that have had no influence and not really can't remember much. There is no personal involvement, personal investment anymore, and the subsequent generations should look at it, be able to look at it emotionally, objectively. That has been the case with the Napoleonic Wars. In 1900, people were looking at the Napoleonic Wars completely objectively on either side. Nobody was getting upset about it anymore. And we have a similar distance now to the Second World War as we had it around 1900 to the Napoleonic Wars. But, as I just mentioned, the number of countries outlawing discussing this particular event is steadily increasing with every year. We're up to 28 now. It's getting worse. It's not cooling down. We're not getting more at ease with our more and more distant past. We are getting more and more extreme about suppressing dissent, controlling the narrative. I shouldn't say we. They, I should say, not we.
Yeah, but Guillermo, then it's all the more reason to talk about it.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm saying. I don't know where the truth is. That's how I started out my journey. But that the government tries to force that narrative down your throat at gunpoint stinks to the high heavens. There is something profoundly wrong. I don't know whether it's the narrative that is wrong or whether it's the mindset using guns to ram down a narrative is wrong, or both. But something stinks. And I can't do anything against the government coming with guns, but I can look into the closets and see how many skeletons are they hiding.
We have a bit of a dirty past also. I think most of the world knows about apartheid. And similarly, the further away from apartheid we go, the more protected the victim narrative becomes. It's become an industry. And Norman Finkelstein has said this himself about the Holocaust. Now, he lost family on both his mother's and father's side in the camps.
South Africa, you know, I have had no interest in it when apartheid happened because I was a kid, I was a teenager, and then it came down. And I have since had some friends down in South Africa or in Deutsch Südwest in Namibia, who have seen what's going on. Namibia is not quite that bad. The dirty past doesn't stop with the end of apartheid. Because my understanding it from the distance, from the report I've seen, and I don't know how accurate they are, there seems to have been installed a kind of reverse apartheid. That white folks are getting deprived, persecuted, and in scenarios that remind me a little bit of what Germans went through between the two world wars in Poland, being ethnically cleansed. Now, that was on a larger dimension, but there seems to be ethnic pressure in South Africa that tries to push.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take 5 before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Let's chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNCs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
White farmers, white people out of society with legitimate and illegitimate rules. So
this is true. And there are over 140 laws that are pretty much discriminatory against white people. And anybody can look it up. There is a website, I can't remember the URL. I think it's called Race Laws or racelaw.co.za.
So, yeah, dirty past and dirty present. The more things change, the more they stay the same. It's just the pendulum swings to the other extreme, and we persecute the other end of the spectrum for a change. That's all that's happened. It may not be too, I don't know, I wasn't there. It may not be to the same extent that it was under apartheid, the anti-black apartheid. Now they have an anti-white apartheid. Be that as it may, I see the same thing with history when we're talking about the Second World War. In Germany in particular, you had the persecution of Jews, of left-wingers, of people of different mindsets under National Socialism, which was dictatorship, not keen on making compromises with minorities. And the pendulum now in modern Germany has swung to the other extreme. And the tools they use is very easy. You stick a Nazi label on someone, and that makes it look legitimate to the world and even applaudable to the world that they persecute these evil Nazis. Nobody really takes a close look at whether these Nazis are really Nazis. How do you define one in the first place? There's German precedent, case law, that says anyone on the conservative or right-wing spectrum can legitimately be called a Nazi. So all the MAGA scene, all Republicans in the United States, for the US listeners, if you were to transfer the society into a mindset of current German zeitgeist, could be called Nazis. They're all Nazis, not just the MAGA, but all Republicans, anything on the right wing. In fact, if you dare raise the current normal national German flag in your front yard in Germany, you can be called a Nazi because you're a nationalist, you're a patriot. Transferring that to American mindset or mindset of healthy nations means that the vast majority of society could be called, under German case law currently, Nazi. Because anything makes you proud of your nation and acting upon it, want to save your nation, want to serve your nation, want to make it stand out against others and be better and finer and greater, make Germany great again. Oh my God, it's all Nazi. So the pendulum has swung to the extreme other end, that anyone that just wants to have normal feelings, positive feelings toward their own ethnicity, culture, nation, gets thrown down the drain. And this is my original starting point, because I grew up developing natural feelings of patriotism to my nation, but then got cornered with all the guilt trips about Second World War and Holocaust, and said, well, that shouldn't stop us. A nation can't function if the members can't be proud of what they are part of. It's like corporate identity. To use a completely innocuous example, if you want to run a company successfully, you need to have the employees identify with it. You have to have a corporate identity where people work for the best of the company, do their best so that the company can succeed, and then everyone will have success and we're doing much better. This is understood within the context of business, of running a business, but the same should be applied to running a society, running a nation, running whatever you have, community of any style. You need to have corporate identity on a national level. We call that patriotism. But in Germany, it's a crime. It's not necessarily legally speaking a crime, but morally speaking, if you stand up for this, you can do that during a soccer game, wave the German flag, you get away with that. But that's as far as it goes. So,
in many ways, Germa, this is a litmus test, though, because a few hundred years ago, witches were being burnt at the stake. If something is true, why does the state need to violently protect it?
They have excuses for it. It's just too sensitive. The former victims are way too vulnerable. Yeah, I call the Jewish minority vulnerable. They're the most powerful, the richest, the most influential. They're the least vulnerable. But that's the argument, basically. It can happen again, and everything needs to be done to prevent it from happening again. The logic on the surface sounds good. Yeah, we have the moral obligation to do everything to prevent it, even from the outset, to even have legitimate criticism. Don't even call it legitimate. Any kind of criticism against Jews surface in society. We have to suppress everything, let alone criticize the historical narrative. But basically, what they're saying here is, back in the past, it was really bad because back then, books were burned, dissidents were persecuted, and they were thrown into prison. In order to prevent from books getting burned and dissidents getting thrown into prison, we need to burn books and throw dissidents into prison. Because that's effectively what's happening. By claiming to fight National Socialist attitudes, whatever they are, preemptively, with all kinds of extreme measures, they have turned into the monster they are claiming to fight. This is a compounded issue. Criticizing Gaza, what Israel has done in Gaza, in Germany, is a crime, and thought crime prosecutions in Germany since 2023 have gone through the roof. There were some 20,000 cases, mostly against what they call right-wing thought crimes, among them Holocaust skepticism, but criticizing immigration, criticizing Jews, if to what degree or ever. But in particular now, has gone on from 20,000 cases per year, and they're up to way over 40,000. And it keeps rising. I'm interested to see middle of this year when they release the data of last year, where this has gone through. Gaza. The Jews are the primary victims of their own propaganda. No, the secondary, I would say. Or maybe the tertiary. The primary, of course, the Palestinians. Secondaries are the Germans themselves, except for their leaders who take advantage of it, who are corrupt, morally speaking. And the third kind of victims are the Jews themselves. There's more and more reports about the second and third generation of Jews who have been born and grown up after the war, suffering trauma and being nervous wrecks and on edge and all kinds of things. Whether that is exaggerated or not can be discussed, but fact of the matter is that if you expose children from kindergarten age on or elementary school age on to propaganda of mass extermination, mass gassings, mass slaughters that is said to have happened to your grandparents and great-grandparents' generation, and you are told this happened, this can happen again, this may happen tomorrow, this may happen to you, you need to protect yourself, you need to act accordingly. And if you tell us elementary school kids, you traumatize them deeply, subconsciously and consciously. And this is a formation process that turns every new generation of Jews into traumatized persons who get paranoid about non-Jews, particularly those who show any kind of critical attitude or even some enmity, some hostility toward Jews for whatever reason. And then comes the Samson option. Then comes the preemptive rise and kill attitude toward non-Jews. We think they're about to build gas chambers again. And in order to prevent that, we lash out preemptively. Because that's basically the narrative that I've been pushing in Gaza. You know, the little things that happened on October 7th are being blown out of proportion. The Palestinians are really out to get us, to murder us all, and to behead our babies, and to cut fetuses out of women's wombs, and to bake them in the oven, and all the other stories that were told, mass rape and what have you. And then we preemptively want to kill everyone who is in our way and who doesn't agree with us. So it turns Holocaust propaganda, genocidal propaganda, fed with the mother's milk, figuratively speaking, leads to traumatized people who are paranoid to the point where they condone, at least condone, or accept, promote, support, and commit genocide. Holocaust education is supposed to prevent genocides. That's the official story. We want to educate everyone with that kind of narrative in a way that they recognize the signs early and stop genocides in the outset when persecution happens. But what we see instead is that it is used as a justification and a fuel and an accelerator of genocide. And this should disturb everyone.
What Norman Finkelstein also said to me is that he refers to it as Holocaust with a lowercase h.
Mm-hmm.
And he was making the point that it's no more important than any other quote-unquote Holocaust that's occurred.
had significant and successful and very influential minorities in all Western countries, and they had developed an ideology that the vast majority of these countries subscribed to, then maybe the Holodomor would have a significance in all our society's narrative and political theater. But that's not the case. And that's not the case for any of the other massacres that have happened. There's only one minority in Western countries in particular, but not just Western countries, that has this clout, this influence, this wealth, and that has the underlying narrative. And the narrative basically is Judaism itself. It's 90% of Christianity is Jewish, the Old Testament. And Christianity is what has for centuries defined the Western world. And to this day, even if most people are not actively Christian anymore, there's still a Christian mindset and the recognition that the Jewish narrative is the bedrock of Christianity. And that gives them, the Jews, leverage, influence. And I always said, you know, had it not been for Christianity, Judaism wouldn't exist anymore. It would have been disappeared like any other Stone Age religion as a tribal religion that got dissolved within the cosmopolitan migration and changes of civilization and so forth over the centuries and millennia. But it did not, like all the others, disappear because Christianity blew out of proportion. And Islam too, which also gives credence to Judaism because it has been built.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
On that rock too. So these huge two monotheistic religions give Judaism, as the only Stone Age tribal religion in the world, credibility and thus, to a certain degree, intellectual invulnerability. And that's being used and abused and misused by the Jews to get leverage. And that's why this narrative is an exception to all the others, because of their intellectual, financial, political, religious, ideological, dogmatic influence and position in most countries of the world that matters right now.
You're making the argument that historical revisionism actually does matter.
Absolutely. It matters to them. Therefore, it should matter to us. Liberation for the Jews from a trauma, from a nightmare, lies in historical skepticism of that Holocaust narrative. Find out for yourself as Jews that you have been lied to, you are being lied to right now, you're being traumatized, manipulated, brainwashed into this trauma, into this paranoia that sets you onto a collision course, not just in the Middle East with all the Muslim and Arab nations and Muslim people of Muslim faith, but also in the Western world, increasingly, as people wake up, things are being manipulated, being influenced. You know, the Epstein files, yeah, Moscow and Putin are in there, but there is the big elephant in the room manipulating American, particularly American high society elites with blackmailing operations. There's so much going on. People should be allowed to be skeptical, to wake up and allow to look into these things. The reason why 28 governments have outlawed this and it keeps spreading is because intellectually we skeptics have won. And they have a hard time suppressing it. Until the Gaza genocide, the Holocaust was the best documented genocide in the history of the world. Not because of what the mainstream has done, because of what we skeptics have done over the last 35 years. You go to holocausthandbooks.com, the research series, absolutely unparalleled. In depth, going into the archives, analyzing and critiquing witness accounts and comparing it with the actual record, this is indeed a very solidly researched event. The Gaza genocide has knocked it out of the ballpark with all the live streaming, all the recording that has happened. Now the Gaza genocide is definitely the best documented genocide in the history, and it's still going on. It is the Holocaust, the second best documented genocide by us, to the degree that we can show the mainstream narrative is highly flawed. Depending on how you define the Holocaust, we can define it in a way where I said, well, the main features of that Holocaust, homicidal gas chambers, 6 million, and an order to exterminate them, these three main pillars collapse. And if we say, well, if that's gone, then there was no Holocaust, then it's still a question of how do you define a Holocaust. At least the capital H goes away, it's replaced by a small h. It was a catastrophe, and I think the Jewish word is more to it, the Shoah, which basically means catastrophe. And for them, it was. The Second World War was full of catastrophes for everyone, not the least for the Germans, for the Russians, for the Ukrainians, for a lot of ethnic men, the old Baltic states, the Caucasian states, ethnic groups. It was a disaster for Europe and for the world, for the Japanese, and so on. And yeah, the Jews, with our narrative, integrate into that, where everyone in Europe was at the throat of everyone else trying to genocidally reduce or wipe them off. And the Jews have no exclusive claim to that. And they don't have any exclusive claim to being only and always the victims either. After Gaza, they have genocide, they have joined the club of genocidal perpetrators. You can make the argument that they had a good participation in genocide before with, or in massacres with heavy involvement of people with Jewish background in the Bolshevik Revolution and the early years of the Soviet Union. But this is a much more complex matter. Fact of the matter is, this time around, they can't say, oh, these were secular Jews and they weren't really Jews. They were revolutionaries and they had only some part of it. There were others too. No, this time in Gaza, it's them. And it is intentional and it is well planned and executed and admitted and recorded. And it's entirely Jewish and Zionist, and there's no other contribution to it, period. So they joined the club. They have no status as victims anymore exclusively. They're just victims and perpetrators in history as everyone else.
This is something, again, that needs to be pointed out. You're not saying that a lot of Jews didn't die. A lot of all kinds of people died in World War II, as well as in the camps.
Sure, absolutely. The only thing that's being contested is basically the iconic murder weapon of the homicidal gas chamber. That's a figment of the imagination. What is contested are numbers in general. And as I'm...
But I mean, even Auschwitz changed its own numbers.
Yeah, this is where it starts. I mean, the mainstream, if you're looking at, is it legitimate to revise the narrative? You see that the mainstream, the Orthodox scholars, have revised their own narrative over and over again. The narrative started out with extreme exaggeration after the war, or during the war, and they have been downgraded for every camp. Auschwitz, you mentioned, yeah, initially the Soviets claimed 4 million, but there were even claims from other quarters that were claiming more, 8 million, 9 million. And then it was downgraded after the collapse of the Soviet Union down to 1 million. But even that narrative is incorrect. If you look at what can be documented, it is 135,500, which is still a massive amount for a camp that existed only between early 1940, slow start until early 1945. So we're talking not quite 5 years. 135,000 people dying is a catastrophe. And there's a lot of suffering. Most of these people died of disease rather than violent deaths. But at the end of the day, suffering doesn't depend on how you die or sometimes actually dying of typhus can involve much more suffering than just getting a shot in the head. But morally speaking, is of course a difference whether you die of typhus that is not intentionally spread by anyone, except maybe the Polish underground has been fighting the German occupation by intentionally spreading typhus, or maybe some of the Jews dying in the camps were a victim not of direct German actions. Of course, the primary responsible is with the person who puts these people in the camp. They always have responsibility. But with the typhus spreading, and that's just a curse of the war. It's a higher power, force majeure, that is beyond anyone's influence, and the collapse of infrastructure leading to the impossibility of supplying camps with anything, and then starvation reaping a major toll. But we have documents showing that the Polish underground actually actively spread typhus pathogens throughout the country and probably inside the camps too. So biological warfare happened to some degree during the Second World War by the pro-Allied underground. Mass deaths happened. The mainstream has acknowledged that. They have repeatedly downgraded the figures, and the best example is not even Auschwitz, it's Majdanek. They started out with 2 million after the war. The Polish judiciary turned it down to 360,000. After the collapse of the Soviet Union, reduced it down to 235,000. And then in 2005, they reduced it to 78,000. So we gone from 2 million to 78,000, not even 4 million. And they threw seven of the originally claimed homicidal gas chambers of the seven. Only two are standing now. Five were jettisoned as propaganda. They were claimed, many of them, for a long time. People visiting the museum for decades were told this was a gas chamber, and now it doesn't say that anymore. The degree of skepticism, the degree of revising that narrative is different between the orthodoxy and our skeptics, but not the principle. They had to revise, throw exaggerated claims out over and over again. They don't parade that around. They are embarrassed by it. They sweep it under the carpet. They just show you what they claim now, not all the things that they have downgraded in the meantime. We, on the other hand, we document, look, you have lied there. You admitted that you lied. No, it was not just an error. They have said we lied for propaganda reasons. We lied because the Soviets were putting guns out of our head in the Eastern Bloc, forcing us to say it. So again and again, we have these mainstream scholars admitting, some of them, we lied because we were forced to, or we lied because it was ideologically convenient, because we were fighting Nazis, and lying about Nazis was a good thing to break them and to destroy them, or so they claim. And you just takes adding one and one together. Okay, they admitted that they lied because they were forced to. They have revised their story when they were able to. And now they have the most extreme threats of punishment for dissent ever in 28 countries. It's worse than it has ever been, and it's getting worse. So why would you believe a mainstream historian now that is punishable with 2, 3, 5, 6, 10, 20 years, depending on which country we're talking about and the circumstances, today, to dissent? Historians are under coercion in the Western world.
We should not be prohibited from discussing events in world history. And the more that we are being told not to, the more we should.
Absolutely. Free speech is the essence of humanity. That sets us apart from animals. And free speech needs defending most where it's threatened most, and that's the area where it's threatened most. The muscle you don't use, you will lose. And free speech is like a muscle. If you don't use it, you lose it. Exercising free speech is most important where the governments want to suppress it with most urgency. And so that's why I'm doing what I'm doing.
How can I follow your work?
I have actually on the screen here, not just my name, but my personal website, gamarudolf.com. you can actually go there, and on the right-hand side, it has links to the various websites that I'm involved in, the Holocaust Encyclopedia, Holocaust Handbooks, the Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust, Lobbying for Free Speech, Where It Matters Most, and Holocaust Academy, where we develop educational material. So it's all linked from there. You can see what I've done personally, the books I've written. You can support me there with various ways, buying signed and dedicated copies, or just downloading some free samples and spread it. That's probably the best platform to go to and take it from there.
Grandma Rudolph, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.